Hi, I'm Ryan Kelly with thehomeloanexpert.com. The only thing I like better than baseball is saving people money. Start saving now with a cash out refinance at thehomeloanexpert.com. Enjoy the podcast.
Celebrate 125 years of history at St. Louis Union Station with free movies every weekend in October and November near the lake. Get a bird's eye view of all that history when you take a spin on the St. Louis Wheel. Soaring 200 feet into the air, you'll appreciate the iconic skyline inside a climate-controlled gondola. Enjoy a round of golf at the 18-hole miniature golf course. Other attractions include the St. Louis Carousel and the Fire and Light Show. Visit stlouisunionstation.com. Come celebrate. Welcome into Scoops with DannyMac.com and my visit with Ted Simmons, the 10th overall pick in 1967 and a Cardinals Hall of Famer. Wanted to do this to promote a special night that he's a part of, and it's brought to you by the National Children's Cancer Society. It is an evening with the Cardinals, and Ted and Ozzie Smith will be the featured stars, if you will, of that night. And also, to get you warmed up, Mike Schilt will be doing a Q&A for about a half hour before those legends take the stage. It all benefits the National Children's Cancer Society, which is based right here in St. Louis. They have raised millions of dollars to help families and children fight childhood cancer. It's always a very, very special night. This one is January 11th at Union Station, and we want you to be a part of it. TheNCCS.org, TheNCCS.org, and you'll see Ted and Ozzie on stage with myself. And before that, for a special price point of the ticket, you can see a Q&A privately with Cardinals manager Mike Schilt. Well, when you think of Ted Simmons, it's an amazing story in baseball that is still going today as he's a scout for the Atlanta Braves. Made his major league debut at the age of 19 in 1968. You want consistency? He had that. 2,472 hits over 21 years. Hit 287 versus right-handed pitching, 281 versus left-handed pitching, and he totaled more walks than strikeouts against both. How about durability? He played in at least 150 games for seven consecutive seasons on the heat and turf of Busch Stadium II. In 1975, he caught 154 games. And at the time, he set the single-season record for hits as a catcher with 188 that was later broken by Jason Kendall. The Hall of Fame, we're going to get into that, and he has some very, very interesting thoughts on that, and we'll know more on December 8th whether or not he gets into the Hall of Fame. He should be in the Hall of Fame. At the time of his retirement, he had 483 doubles, which was the most by any catcher in the Hall of Fame, and held the National League record for home runs by a switch-hitting catcher. 285 average, 18 points higher than Johnny Bench's. He batted 306 times. He reached 20 homers, 5 times as a Cardinal. 6 times with the Cardinals, he was an All-Star, twice in the American League. And as far as Cardinal switch hitters, how about this? 172 home runs and nearly 1,000 RBIs. That's why he's in the Cardinals Hall of Fame. That's why he should be in baseball's Hall of Fame. He'll be a part of the National Children's Cancer Society coming up in January. We hope that you'll be a part of it as well. Get a ticket at thenccs.org. Sit back and relax. A great conversation. So many topics covered, from what he's doing now as a scout, being a GM, playing for the St. Louis Cardinals, and what the Cardinals Hall of Fame and what baseball's Hall of Fame would mean to Ted Simmons. It's all coming up on ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Thanksgiving is just around the corner. Are you all set? You've been piling up those Schnucks Rewards points all year. What better time to cash them in? You could have Schnucks pay for the Thanksgiving turkey or a pumpkin pie from the best bakery in St. Louis. Maybe even your entire holiday meal, all because you're a Schnucks Rewards member. Whether you're hosting the whole family or bringing a special dish to their house, make sure you're all set for Thanksgiving. Head to Schnucks and cash in those rewards points. Think Schnucks. Hair Saloon for Men, proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. Home base in St. Louis, founded in 1997. 16 locations. You'll receive the perfect haircut, complimentary beverage, relaxing shampoo, hot towel and a mint, complimentary shoe shine, all for just $22. And for an extra $5, get a stress-relieving scalp massage. Hair Saloon for Men. 16 locations. There's one near you. Hair Saloon for Men. Great fundraiser is coming up to benefit the National Children's Cancer Society. That'll be on January 11th. And the two featured Cardinals are Cardinal Hall of Famers, Ted Simmons and Ozzie Smith. And we're hoping to say two baseball Hall of Famers as well. But I want this to be kind of a wide-ranging interview with you, Ted, because for so many people in St. Louis, you played in an era in which the club just couldn't get over the hump, but yet you were, in many ways, the face of the team at that time. So let's start with just going into the Cardinals Hall of Fame and putting you back into the prominence of being out front center with the Cardinal fans. What did that mean for you to go, and your family, to go in the Cardinal Hall of Fame?
Well, it was a wonderful experience. That day was a celebration that, you know, ranks in one's life. I can remember being asked the question, what does that feel like for you? And I said, you know, recently I watched Mickelson go into the Augusta Masters tournament and win it and then put on the green jacket. And I said, you know, I don't know what that feels like. It must have been very, very special for Mickelson to put on that jacket. I don't know what that feels like, but I can assure you there's one thing for sure, and that is Mickelson does know what it feels like to put this red one on, and I perceive it as comparable. It's a really special thing to have happen, and in a great, great franchise organization that is as historic as it could possibly be, and be part of all that, put on that red jacket, is real special.
What is it like when you still put it on now and you do it multiple times throughout the year, opening day, the Hall of Fame ceremony, those kind of things? What's it like every time you put it on?
Well, it's special because they don't let you take it home.
Right.
They're afraid you'll go out to eat and get mustard stains on it or something. So they, after the day's over, they yank it off you and they put it back and store it away. So it's not like you're living with it. So when you put it back on, it's like, for the first time again, almost every time.
You were at other places. Do you consider yourself a Cardinal through and through now?
Of course, of course. I mean, I was born and bred. I was picked number one, 10th overall in the country, 1967. I remember Tim McCarver was the catcher at the time, and they had recently, you know, been to the World Series and had great teams at that time, 64, 67, 68. You know, they were the Heat. So, as I say, born and bred Cardinal, I've always felt that way, and I see myself as such.
When you got to the organization and then you made it to the big leagues at such a young age, were there guys that you look back now and say, man, that guy was such a mentor for me and just getting me to the big leagues? Your talent's going to get you there, but there's those that teach you how to be a big leaguer too. Who are those guys?
Well, I was so young at the time. I came up and I was, you know, in September, first time, I was 19 years old.
Right.
And then because Mike Shannon had gotten ill and Torrey had just come to play third base, when Shannon got sick in that spring training, they had to improvise. I was scheduled to go back to AAA, which I did. But when it became clear Mike had the initial stages of nephritis, the kidney ailment, he had to literally retire from baseball. At that time, Torrey went back from catching to third base, and then I came up from AAA to play every day as the catcher. Wasn't ready. I was certainly way too young. But after a while, when you get mentored by people like McCarver, Torrey, catch people like Gibson, Carlton, you grow up really quickly. They literally show you how the game is played, how the game is pitched, what the expectations are, what the pace is, and the expectation is that you adapt quickly, which, because I was athletic, I was able to do, and over time, I found myself established at the major league level.
Do you remember that first time catching Bob and what it was like for you?
I don't remember the first time because I was having difficulty, frankly. I'd never seen a guy pitch at that pace with such great stuff. And so trying just to get the fingers down and coordinated throughout the course of the game was a task for me. Finally, Gibson came to me and he said, look, I only throw two pitches, fastball, slider. You put down whatever you want. If I'm shaking, go to the other one. So if I put down fastball and he's shaking his head, I knew the pitch was going to be slider. In that way, I wasn't disrupting his pace. He could go into his windup. He could get into his program and check the sign. If it wasn't the one he wanted, he'd shake his head, and I'd go to the other one. I'd know what was coming that way. So.
That's the way to do it.
That wasn't the first time I caught him, but I would say it's how I adapted over the course of the first 10 times.
How did you make it through the heat of the summer? You would play 150-plus games at Old Busch Stadium, and the turf was there at that point in time after moving out of Sportsman's. How did you manage to play and keep physically fit and just through the rigors of a season? I mean, I was looking at your numbers, Ted. The one thing that people don't look at is longevity that you played with, the amount of games you played, and you did it in the heat of the summer in St. Louis on the turf. How were you able to do that?
Well, I came up young.
So that helps.
It helps an awful lot. I mean, I had played 6 years in the major leagues, and I was 25 years old. Most people don't get to the major leagues till they're 25 years old. So having done that and become acclimated to it, one, to the St. Louis heat and humidity, the turf, I would point out I had one advantage that Brock didn't. Brock was in left field standing on the turf. At least I was at home plate, and that was dirt.
Yeah.
So unless I was on the base paths, I wasn't standing on it. But the fact that I was young and the fact that I wanted to succeed drives you. And what I also realized at an early age is that if I wanted to play at the major league level and stay, playing every day was the trick. And two, I learned also that it didn't really matter how I felt, only mattered what I did. There were days I felt awful and did great. There were days I felt great and did awful. And so I made the disassociation of how I felt really quickly. Because, as I say, some days I felt terrible, hit two homers.
Yeah,
you know,
it happens. It's baseball.
That's right. And days I felt great and struck out three times. So you have to separate that. It hasn't got anything to do with what you feel. Only matters what you do. I never know when the pitcher's going to throw a fastball right down the middle of the plate.
Mm-hmm.
And I never know when he's going to paint the black all day on me. So all I can do is go out there and deal with, you know, what I get.
When you look back, I've always said this, and growing up here, I loved watching you and those teams, and I always felt you guys were close. And then I think about, man, if they didn't trade Carlton, obviously, and Jerry Royce, you're talking about one of the elite teams in the 70s. Do you feel the same way that you would have been that good if those guys stayed?
Well, if those two guys had stayed, it certainly would have changed our ball club considerably. Then, you know, Al might have been able to save a few more games and may not have to pitch 7th, 8th, and 9th to get a save. So it changes the dynamic, you know, a lot when people like Carlton or Royce leave a roster. But, you know, it's still, you know, hindsight is 20/20. You can look back and dream and hope and wish things were different. But you can only do what you can do. And, you know, in those days, I mean, Cincinnati had a really good team.
Sure.
So did Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
And to overtake either one of those two to become National League champions would have been, you know, tough enough no matter what the constitution of your team was.
Who was the guy that would get in the box and you're putting down the signs and it didn't matter who was on the mound, but you're like, man, how are we going to get this guy out? Like, yeah. Stargell or Bench, yeah. Those kind of players of Pittsburgh and Cincinnati that you're talking about. Who was that guy that in that era that you thought, wow, this is going to be a tough one tonight?
Well, you know, it depends on what, you know, you're concerned about. If you're concerned about the home run, Stargell, Bench, these guys, Foster, these guys were real issues. If you were worried about the long ball or the home run. But if you were concerned about a base hit, one base hit in a crucial situation with the lead run at second base, you know, or at third base, if the, you know, the run scores, the game is over. Toughest guy, you know, toughest two guys I ever, you know, was, you know, felt that way about. Rusty Staub. If Rusty decided he wasn't going to strike out, you couldn't strike him out. I mean, it wasn't a matter of him sitting up there trying to foul the ball off. He would sit up there and put a bat on you that every at bat, every swing was, like, critical. And, okay, I got him set up for this. You didn't have Rusty set up for anything because he either hit it right smack on the nose or foul it off and make you start over. Rusty Staub was that kind of hitter for one base hit. Mm-hmm. The other guy, the best hitter I ever saw, played against was George Brett.
Really?
George Brett was the toughest out in all of baseball. And if he'd have played in a ballpark where it had a reasonable home run, he'd hit 500 or more homers.
I was thinking you were going to say Pete Rose.
No, no. George Brett was the best hitter I ever saw.
Is that right?
Absolutely. I mean, he hit .388.
Not bad, yeah.
And as I say, in a ballpark that...
Until they change those dimensions at Kauffman, yeah.
I'm telling you, he played where you had to homer, and, you know, I think he had 400 or 500 doubles because he kept one hop on that wall. If he'd have been in a normal park, those would have been homers.
Was it tough when you were traded away? I know a lot of fans have been curious about this, and they want me to ask you about it, so I will. How tough was it when you were traded away in the situation with Whitey and you know, just the different things that were going on with the organization and yourself at that time?
Well, anytime you're traded, especially for the first time, it's always difficult, okay? But, you know, so much has been made about that trade and the feelings that were attached, you know, and speculated about. I've known Whitey for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And at the time, Whitey and I talked specifically about that trade because, frankly, I was 10-5, meaning I had 10 years in the majors and could okay the trade. So all I needed to know was what the goal and objective was. I also wanted to know who was in the deal. And when it was clear to me, and Whitey made it plain that Fingers was in that deal, along with Vukovic and myself, I knew what Milwaukee had at that time, and they had a dynamite baseball team, particularly offensive. Now, if the three of us, the names I just mentioned, went to Milwaukee's club, top-notch closer, Major League Hall of Fame caliber, and a Cy Young eventual winner in Vukovic, plus myself, they didn't have a solid everyday catcher. I knew that Milwaukee was going to be better and going to be very competitive. So when the time came and Whitey and I talked through what the goals and objectives were and what that trade specifically would be, I was then in a position to say, okay. And as I say, people have speculated about the dynamic that Ted Simmons and Whitey Herzog have had over the last 35 or 40 years, or however many years it's been now. I just let it go, and pretty much Whitey does too, because we know what happened, and we know how it evolved, and I don't hold any animosity over it, and I don't think he does either.
No. I find it great, too. When you guys come to the Hall of Fame, it's an embrace, it's a hug, how you doing, it's, you know,
I mean,
and people need to know that, too.
Well, I hope they come to know and accept it, because it's true.
Yeah.
I mean, Whitey was a great, great manager. People ask me, who's the best manager you ever had? I was only with him for the 1 year, but clearly the best strategist. No one could out-bullpen him. Nobody could design him, because he literally took a ball club and said, okay, we're going to speed and defense you to death. And he did. And he designed it like the club he had in Kansas City, which was also a turf team, in a ballpark identical, same dimensions, same configuration. And he knew that if you got a ground ball or a two-hopper into the gap, that was going to be a triple. And he said, if I put speed and defenders in that outfield, I can cut it off and either keep it to a single or a double. He came to St. Louis and designed the club the same way. We know the names.
Yeah.
And we know who they are and where they played. And it's essentially what he did in Kansas City. And he knew what he was doing when he brought that concept here.
For fans that don't know, you're a scout still in the game of baseball with the Atlanta Braves. You've made your life in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
So now in your post-playing career, GM, you've done the scouting. How much enjoyment do you get out of that and still watching the game? We'll get into how it's played, but just still being involved in the game of baseball and keeping your hand in it.
I'm very lucky. The game has changed, as you touched upon just a moment ago, considerably. But if you want to stay in this game, or if you're been able to stay in like I have over the last 35, 40 years, you have to be adaptable, particularly in the last 20 years for sure, because with the analytics today, you have to understand and learn that language. And if you don't, you won't be in. Today, our game is predicated on the analytics. And if you don't understand that, and if you can't adapt to it, you'll be out.
Is it good or is it bad for the game?
I think it's changed the game. It's changed the game profoundly. There are aspects of it that are very, very, very good. I mean, people complain about the shift. The shift is not a new concept. The difference is today the shift is applied based on the statistics that exist on a player's at-bats. And if he has a trend where 78% of every ground ball he hits is to the, you know, the right field side of second base, you're an idiot to play a third baseman at third base. And so that's what we're looking at today for just about everyone. It'll change back.
You think so?
I'm absolutely sure it'll change back, but it's going to take a while.
Does it have to change because guys, let's say at high school, college, because it's starting to trickle down there too, that they make the adjustment so then by the time they get to pro ball, they know how to deal with the shift?
Yes, and they'll have to go back to learning how to manipulate the bat head so that when I want to hit the ball over there,
right,
I have to get that bat angle in a position so the ball, when it does make contact with the bat, will go over there. In today's game, over the last 15 to 20 years, we have what's referred to as a swing plane, which is essentially smooth slightly up, which generates the fly ball consistently. And that's related to the ground ball in that if you hit a ground ball today, you're going to be out.
Yeah.
Because the trend is going to tell the opposition where to put those fielders.
So when you write up a report, is it more an analytical report of what you're seeing for your club and your scouting, or are you're taking the old school look of being that bird dog and saying, that guy can play, that guy can't play, this is where you pitch him, those kind of things?
Everybody knows today that it's both.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subjective analysis and objective.
Yeah.
Quantify, subjective. Can this guy run? Can he throw? Does he hit? Does he hit with power? Does he have the ability to manipulate the bat, hit for a high average? Does he have a high on-base percentage? What's his ops? All of these are part of the mix today, which when you evaluate a player today, what's his runs? What's his RBIs? What's his home run production? What's his stolen base? What's his WAR? And years ago, no one knew what WAR was all about.
Right.
Wins above replacement. And that is the telling stat today.
No question.
What's your WAR? And that's what you pay for.
When you watch the game, I'm assuming you're still a fan of the game.
I am.
Taking away the scouting aspect of it and front office aspect of it and playing aspect of it. Are you concerned about the game as a fan in the length of the games and that a lot of times it's just a result of a walk, a strikeout, and a home run?
I'm concerned about that, yes, but baseball is forever evolving.
Yeah.
If people don't get in a hurry, okay, it'll change back. It always did, it always has, it always will. But right now we're in a cycle where the home run is king. And frankly, the home run has always been king. It just didn't happen as often. The ballparks were bigger. The players weren't as physically capable of hitting home runs as they are today. The swing plane has created a leverage perspective that generates more homers. But people might get to the point where they say, you know, if we could just get that ball pushed over where that third base is, that third baseman is vacated, get a run right now, we'll win the game. Well, that's not so emphasized right now, because the most efficient way to score a run in Major League Baseball is to homer. And so it's changed our game, but it might change back.
With you being a great catcher and, in my mind, a Hall of Fame catcher, you watch Yadier Molina. You've seen him his whole career. A lot of fans. I've done just about every one of his games, and I'm watching one of the great players I've ever seen put on a Cardinal uniform.
You are.
And you feel the same way, don't you? He's a Hall of Fame player.
There's no question about this. You know, my shortest version with Yadi, I'll say it again. Yadi has the ability to be the hitting instructor, pitching coach, the manager, the catcher. He has the ability to do all those things. What's extraordinary about him is he could do them all at the same time. And when you think about that, I'm not exaggerating. He might not be willing to do it, but if for some reason that became necessary, he could do it.
You think so?
I absolutely do. He could hit. He's become a great hitter. He's become a run producer. He's now learned to hit with power. I mean, you know, his whole offensive approach is significant today as opposed to when he first came. He understands the pitching inside out. I mean, when he goes to the mound to stop play and everybody comes to the mound, I mean, it's because he is the pitching coach and he is out there reflecting the manager's intent and the pitching coach's intent. And he makes it plain to everyone when he gets out there. And then he goes back and is then catcher again. And it's very likely in the next half inning he's leading off and is apt to homer.
Yeah.
So you're looking at an extraordinary, extraordinary player. One I've never seen in my life defensively like him.
What is it about his defense that makes him different than others?
Well, he certainly carries, you know, the ability to throw, which is always the first prerequisite. Bench had a great arm. You know, Fisk had a very strong arm, people like this. And Yadi has that kind of arm comparably. But he runs the game like no other catcher I've ever seen. I recognize what he does because the things he does occasionally I remember doing myself. And I say, this is intentional. You don't see this often. And so when I see it, it thrills me. The thing that's extraordinary about him, he can literally take young pitchers, which is what he does, and he forces them to pitch above their skill set or ability. So if he's out there and it's 3-1 on the batter and the lead runner's at third base, okay, and there's one out, he's not going to give that guy a fastball. I don't care how good that pitcher's fastball is. He's going to demand or insist that he throw something off speed, either a slider, 3-1 for strike, or changeup, 3-1 for strike, and get back into the count. But he will never let a young pitcher ever just give up.
Yeah.
And say, okay, I'm giving in. Yadi won't let that happen. It's how he runs the game. It's how he makes really special pitchers out of ordinary ones. And I mean, a good pitcher, if that good pitcher pitches to Yadi, he's got a chance of being a great pitcher in just a fairly short manner of time. Yadi makes them do things that they don't think they can do.
Interesting. I'll wrap it up with just a couple of these questions. What are you most proud of in your career as you reflect on your baseball life? What are you most proud of?
Well, I don't know what I'm most proud of because it's been such a long career and so many wonderful things have happened to me. I got to play in the World Series. I played in the seventh game. I hit a World Series home run. All the things that everyone dreams about as a little boy and in some instances today, a little girl, thinks about. I want to play in the seventh game. I want to play in the World Series. I had all those dreams as a kid, and I got to do all those things. So I don't know what I'm most proudest of, other than to say I'm really happy to have been able to begin my life in this industry and eventually end my life, hopefully, still in it. At this point in time, I couldn't be happier. I guess, or more proud that I've been able to last this long. There have been lots of changes, lots of things I've seen that are remarkable. And I guess I'm proudest, more than anything else, to have been able to span that length of time.
My conversation with Ted Simmons continues in just a moment, and we'll get into whether or not he believes he should be in the Hall of Fame. Reminder for Blues fans, make one of the 10 area Hotshot Sports Bar and Grill locations your home for Blues hockey this year. Enjoy all the games on dozens of TVs while you'll enjoy great specials on Jack Daniel's cocktails, Blues Sampler appetizers, and so much more. Play Blues Roulette during every game for your shot to win great prizes and tickets at Hotshots. Don't forget $1 tacos any day after the Blues score 5 goals. Find a Hotshots near you, hotshotsnet.com, proud partner of the St. Louis Blues and home to Blues fans since 1990.
It's amazing your baseball life. The culmination of that could be the Hall of Fame.
And to your credit, you're not one that touts yourself for the Hall of Fame. Others do that. Why aren't you frustrated by that? I mean, you should be in the Hall of Fame, Ted, period. The numbers are there. The numbers are some of the best in the 70s. They're the best compared even to Johnny Bench, who people put at number one. You're there. I don't understand it. And yet you don't get frustrated. At least I don't see it.
Well, I was touching upon it just a moment ago. The Hall of Fame would be a wonderful thing to culminate my life in baseball with. There's no getting around it. I'd be really, really pleased if that happened. But as I said a moment ago, I've seen so much and gained so much from this industry, okay? If in fact, okay, I didn't end up in the Major League Baseball's Cooperstown Hall of Fame, if that didn't happen to me, if I went about the rest of my life lamenting or grieving the idea that it didn't happen for me, I'd be ashamed, because so much good has happened to me. So that if someone were to ask me, what's your feeling about this whole business, all of it, I say, I feel lucky to have just been able to play. And that's not false humility. People who get to play this game and be in this industry for a long time see how wonderful it is. It's like living in Disneyland every day of your life. I've been that lucky. From a little boy, I wanted this. If I end up in the Hall of Fame, that'd be the greatest. I wanted that too. But good God, I've gotten so much. I'd be ashamed if I walked around, even for one moment, disgusted or unhappy that I didn't get it, inducted into the Cooperstown Hall of Fame. I'd be a fool, I'd look ridiculous, and I'd be ashamed.
You deserve to be in there.
Well, I appreciate it. We'll see, it might happen.
If not, I'll see you on January 11th.
Okay, all right, good enough.
Thank you, Ted.
I'll be there.
Thank you.
All right.